Taking Aim with
Ralph Schoenman
and Maya Schoen, coming to you Tuesday, April 11th, 2006. Today we have Ralph in Vallejo, California, and I'm here in Southern California, and we're glad to be with all of you. On January 7th, 2006 of this year, the World Health Organization confirmed that two teenage siblings died of bird flu in Turkey. They had died that week, and the WHO confirmed that they had been infected with the deadly H5N1 strain of the avian flu virus. The World Health Organization stated this was the first time the strain had killed humans outside East Asia. Only a month later, in February, the early part of February, the world was shocked when bird flu was found in Africa. February 9th, the Wall Street Journal reported an outbreak of avian influenza had killed 40,000 birds on a large commercial farm in Nigeria. International health officials reported on February 8th, the day before, that this marked Africa's first confirmed case of the virus. The detection of the disease in Africa, they said, raised the possibility that the virus would establish a new stronghold and elude the continent's disease surveillance programs. This would pose a threat to human populations throughout the continent of Africa. The World Organization for Animal Health, the Paris-based organization, said that the avian influenza that appeared in Nigeria was a highly pathogenic strain. From Turkey to Africa, the bird flu, the avian flu virus, then spread to Greece, to Azerbaijan, and then to countries throughout Europe. By March of this year, March 21st, the Center for Disease Control reported that the H5N1 virus had split into two different forms. It had evolved into two genetically different strains. The researchers from the Center for Disease Control then said that the two distinct forms made them even more concerned that the avian flu virus, H5N1, would evolve into a form easily transmissible between humans, which could spark a pandemic. Is this the end of the story, or is this just the beginning? If we look back a year ago, the Wall Street Journal had revealed on March 24th that the United States was creating a bird flu virus mutation. Within the bowels of the U.S. Center of Disease Control and Prevention, a six-month series of experiments, which has since continued on, was mixing and matching genes from the H5N1 avian flu virus that was spreading throughout the world. They were mixing the H5N1 avian flu virus with the common human flu virus, that is, with the genes of the H3N2 virus, the strain that is behind the most recent human flu outbreaks. Today on Taking Aim, we continue our series of creating the next pandemic to discuss the work that is taking place within military labs and university labs supported by the military throughout the United States. Ralph?
From military lab to mass infection, creating the next pandemic. In a sense, Maya, this is part 7 of our ongoing series and what will become a book fairly soon on the militarized deployment of the prospect of mass infection and of mass pandemic as a method of rule of a system in terminal decay. United Press International on March 24th from Atlanta, Georgia. U.S. to create a bird flu virus mutation, The U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention has begun a series of experiments to track how the bird flu virus will result in a human pandemic. The six-month series of experiments will simulate the mixing and matching of genes from the H5N1 avian flu virus that has plagued Asia and the common flu virus that public health experts fear will turn avian flu into the pandemic that the Wall Street Journal reported on Thursday. This article continues. The CDC scientists, United Press International tells us, are operating inside an ultra-secure laboratory and are swapping the genes of H5N1 avian virus with the genes of H3N2, and the goal is to substitute 8 genes of each virus one by one with the 8 genes from the other virus and to track more than 250 possible combinations of flu viruses that will spread easily among humans. Now, this is a program unmarkedly, or rather undisguisedly, designed to create forms and combinations of viral strains for which there is no immune response. And the description of this process by United Press International is confirmed again by the Washington Post, U.S. to create a bird flu virus mutation, which replicates that information but amplifies it. Super flu is being brewed in the lab, reported the New Scientist as far back as February 26, 2004. After the worldwide alarm triggered by 2003 SARS outbreak, it might seem reckless to set about creating a far more devastating virus in the lab, but that is what is being undertaken by researchers. We already know that the H5N1 bird flu virus, the New Scientist continues, ravaging poultry farms in Asia, can be lethal when it infects people. Now they are tinkering with its genes to turn it into a strain capable of spreading from human to human. If they manage this, they will have created a virus that will kill tens of millions of people if it gets out of the lab. Researchers say experiments like this are needed to answer crucial questions. What makes the virus so deadly, they say. But it is not clear, the New Scientist continues, how much we could learn from such work. It is already possible to create a vaccine by other means. What is being undertaken here is to create the very condition that they purport to be concerned to prevent. And the result will be, the New Scientist tells us, a pandemic that may prove far worse than that of 1918.
Ralph, let's look at these past pandemics. In 1918, what is called the Spanish flu, influenza, because it was first recognized in Spain in 1918 in the World War One troops. Now, 1918 was the height of World War One, and this pandemic spread rapidly throughout the world, killing almost 50 million people. The flu evolved in its lethal aspect, in its pathogenicity, in the World War One Western Front. And they've studied, there have been many studies of this, and there was a book called Fever of War, the Influenza Epidemic in the U.S. Army during World War One, that was written by Carol Byerly, a historian of military medicine. And she examined how this flu evolved and developed. And it developed a unique virulence in the trenches in the hospitals, the trains and the trucks of the front, because you had the deathly ill lying beside the uninfected, and lethal strains were easily passed on. They passed on throughout the world, and people didn't have resistance to this flu. Now, this flu, the 1918 flu, has been discovered to be of the avian variety, that is, found within birds. In 1957, another flu pandemic emerged, H2N2, and that was the dominant flu virus for 11 years. But in 1968, a new strain, H3N2, created a new pandemic. The 1957 one killed a million people, mostly elderly. And the H3N2, which appeared in 68, and by that time H2N2 had mysteriously vanished, they say. The 1968 one killed fewer people, but still hundreds of thousands of people. These, what we have today now with the new variety of avian flu, and this is important to note, is the manipulations that are going on in the laboratory are what's going to create the pandemic, the promised pandemic, the pandemic promised by Julie Gerberding of the Center of Disease Control. Ralph.
Well, we have to put this in the very specific context that we have been broadcasting and explaining and analyzing and documenting over the previous six components of creating the next pandemic. The Plum Laboratory laboratory on Long Island was a laboratory that actually manipulated and engendered forms of the Marburg and Ebola virus, which then emerged in Africa. The very manipulated and combined virus that the Plum Laboratory developed is that which then unfolds in Africa. Wendy Barclay of the University of Reading in the United Kingdom, when addressing the question of the creation of these viruses as a supposed method for tracking how they unfold, absolutely demolished this thin rationale for the weaponization of a super virus for which there is no known resistance. She says none of these methods reflects how flu behaves in humans. In fact, she says the creation of a pandemic virus will engender the very conditions that we are nominally being told it was designed to examine and to prevent. The processes used to create these viruses are precisely those that will engender the pandemic. One is to tinker with the genome of a bird flu virus to mimic mutations. This can be done by any other by all kinds of methods without engendering a super virus. So the people who are actually being called upon to participate in this, many scientists who are not, as they say, embedded in the military, are rejecting this out on principle and out of hand, and are identifying it as the very cause of the potential pandemic, as opposed to a nominal attempt to contain it. One of the reasons that the H5N1 virus is regarded as a treatable disease in humans is that it is considered that it would not spread normally from human to human. But this is not necessarily true of the genetically engineered strains that are being created. And indeed, those strains have no known immune response, and any putative drug supplies would quickly run out if such a virus triggers a major epidemic, she notes. So the public rationale for this is without a scintilla of evidence to support it, other than the what it obviously is, which is a weaponization of the very viral agent that they are purporting to be concerned to prevent. And this theme is explored in some depth on January 29th. In the Sunday New York Times, in a magazine cover story called "Why Revive a Deadly Flu Virus" by Jamie Shreve. Inside the freezer were trays and boxes containing selected agents, highly pathogenic microbes that under the Patriot Act cannot be handled without special clearance from the Department of Justice.
Ralph, there is one person who has clearance, and only one person. This is Terrence Tumpey. He handles the pathogenic microbes. He's the only person who is authorized to handle the most pathogenic, and that is what the subject of this article is about by Jamie Shreve, and that is the Spanish flu influenza, the 1918 influenza virus that killed 50 million people at the time. And what this article discusses and what we'll discuss now is the manipulation, is the recreation by the U.S. government of the Spanish flu influenza. So we not only have the manipulation of H5N1, we have next here that we're discussing is the manipulation, the recreation of the Spanish flu influenza. And it doesn't stop there. Ralph?
Well, that's correct, Maya, and Tumpy is the official functionary who has been given the authority to undertake this work, and as the article states, the 1918 flu virus is remarkable for two reasons. It caused the most lethal plague in the history of humankind. It spread across the planet, striking down healthy young adults. Once ensconced in their lungs, the virus triggered a havoc of inflammation, hemorrhage, and cell death. Trying to draw air into such lungs was like breathing through meat. Many of the afflicted died within hours after they first began to feel a little feverish. Others succumbed more slowly to secondary bacterial infections. By the spring of the following year, the virus had disappeared as mysteriously as it had come. The second, and in some ways even more remarkable thing about the 1918 flu virus is that it has literally been brought back to life. In October, a team of scientists, Tung Pianum among them, announced that they had recreated the extinct organism from its genetic code, essentially a scenario played out in the movie Jurassic Park, although here on a microbial scale. In the movie, the scientist's self-serving revivification of dinosaurs leads to mayhem and death. Tumpy claims that the resurrected microbe will prevent a calamity, not cause one. But many questions remain, the article states. And they want to know what made the 1918 flu, which began as a virus native to wild birds, mutate into a form that passed easily from one human to the other. But what has happened is that, as the article states, quote, Tumpy and his colleagues have brought one serial killer back from the grave, so it can nominally testify against another. How dangerous is this 1918 virus to today's population? Its genetic code is now in public databases where researchers can download it and conduct experiments. Quote, give me $100,000 in 2 months and I could recreate it right here in my lab, says Earl Brown, the flu researcher who specializes in the evolution of virulence at the University of Ottawa. You wouldn't be able to tell it from the real thing that was around 100 years ago. Would it kill at the same rate as in 1918? Probably. But if you're sane, you don't want to have to find that out. You don't give this thing a second time around, quote unquote. As the article states, science has crossed into an uncertain new world where the drive to know life on its most fundamental level has led to methods that endanger it. The resurrection of the 1918 influenza virus was a team effort engaging the resources of the CDC in Atlanta, an obscure military pathology lab outside Washington, D.C., an esteemed group of influenza experts at Mount Sinai School of Medicine in New York, and one elderly Swede. Well, the point here, again, as it's a very long article, is that they are full bore in the creation, the recreation of the 1918 virus, the H1N1, the mother of all flus. And they're now in their recreation of it, tinkering with it to create a variant through reassortment for which there is no known immune response. What is that?
Ralph, the obscure military pathology lab is the Armed Forces Institute of Pathology in Rockville, Maryland. Obscure from public eye, but definitely not obscure from the biological weapons development in the United States. The Armed Forces Institute of Pathology is in many ways similar to the Army's U.S. AMRID in Fort Detrick. And as you mentioned, we have at Mount Sinai, right in New York, at Mount Sinai School of Medicine, the influenza team that actually combined some of the elements of the Spanish flu virus that Tumpy later coordinated. The obscure Swede is Johan Hultin, who actually was a PhD student in 1950, and went to Alaska, to the Seward Peninsula, where he tried to dig up from the mass graves people who had died of the Spanish flu. And as we have reported in Creating the Next Pandemic, this is how they went to get the cell tissue of, you know, for people buried under the icy tundra to see if it would be preserved. Well, it didn't. He wasn't able to do that in 1950, but recently he heard about the efforts and he went at his own expense to Alaska and he managed to get the cell tissue that with modern technology they were able to use for the last bit of information that they needed to recreate the Spanish flu influenza. And the man most responsible for resurrecting this 1918 flu virus is Jeffrey Tautenberger, who is the chairman of the Department of Molecular Pathology at the Armed Forces Institute of Pathology in Rockville, Maryland. What's interesting to note about this institute, this Armed Forces Institute, is that they contain 3 million pathological samples, tissue samples that date back to the Civil War. And what they were doing with the 1918 virus, they were resurrecting it. And that means that we've heard of this resurrection, but it also means that they, with these 3 million samples, that they are probably resurrecting many other diseases and using them in biological weapons research. And this is going on in the Armed Forces laboratories, as well as at the University of Wisconsin, at a university, the National Microbiology Laboratory in Canada, at Mount Sinai, and in the University of St. Louis, and in many others, not just with the Spanish flu virus, not just with the avian flu virus, but with the smallpox itself and many other of the pox viruses which attack animals and could be manipulated as they're doing with the avian flu virus so that they can attack human beings too.
Well, that's exactly, Maya, what we have been documenting. We have already done a series of programs about the anthrax and have tracked the anthrax to a military lab. It has the fingerprint of the precise, it's a militarized form of anthrax. It's only been produced in military labs. And we have the new scientist in London at the time documented that the particular form of anthrax that emerged in postal offices and in the Congress was, in fact, tracked to that military lab alone with the fingerprint of the anthrax variant that was the result of a militarized weapon. It's very transparent what we're dealing with here. In fact, you mentioned Mount Sinai and Peter Police from the Mount Sinai team. He too has been working with the military, and he contacted Jeffrey Tautenberger to supply him the blueprint for the virus. Mount Sinai will, quote, function as the parts factory, putting together the genes. Another laboratory with biosecurity facilities secured will work with the highly infectious agents and will be recruited as the final assembly plant. And that role will fall to Terrence Tumpey of the CDC.
And
it's
Ralph,
it is a military conspiracy with scientists who are essentially prostituting themselves to the militarized uses of the viral agents and who are engaged in a program to develop highly infectious agents, mutated forms of these mass killer viral agents, manipulating their genomes and their gene structure to create a variant for which there is no known antidote, for which no vaccine that could be designed can be effective. this was the research that should not have been performed, stated Roger Ebright, Howard Hughes Medical Institute investigator at Rutgers University. If this virus were to be released, it is virtually certain that there would be a greater lethality and that the threat of pandemic that is in the news daily will become a reality. Every distinguished scientist has come to that same conclusion.
Ralph, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but much is made about the stockpiling of antivirals such as Tamiflu, and there's another. And it is very clear, particularly as the CDC has now noted with the different strains of the avian flu virus that are developing, and they have shown that Tamiflu is not effective. So all this stockpiling of the antiviral agent Tamiflu, which must be taken in the first few hours anyway, it is useless. And what these scientists are doing, as noted in this New York Times article, is that they're examining the role of the virulence and the transmission of particular mutations on the virus's genes. In other words, they keep manipulating these viruses to find out how they become more virulent and how they transmit more easily, particularly how they can transmit from human to human. Because if a virus is very deadly, then it cannot be transmitted easily because the host is dead too soon. So viruses evolve to a state where they're not as lethal, and that is when they can be transmitted much more easily. And one of the genes, the article notes, that was driving replication bears a single mutation that, and this is in the Spanish flu influenza, that is found not only in the 1918 virus, but also in all human flus. But, interesting enough, no bird flus have this mutation, not even the H5N1, the current avian flu virus. In other words, the mutation from this derivative bird flu that causes it to spread and to be virulent among humans is not in the avian flu, the viruses that are killing birds. And it is with this mutation, with this gene, that is the one that they are focusing on the most.
Well, it's interesting, Maya, that in the Shreve article he says, what may be the most informative research is the most dangerous as well. Tumpy's freezer contains the resurrected 1918 virus, which is lethal and highly transmissible. It also contains samples of the H5N1, which is legal but not yet transmissible. But they are undertaking a, quote, great set of experiments combining the genes of these two killers in various combinations, and they are seeing which has the capacity to be transmitted. This will create in the laboratory the very pandemic that researchers most fear may emerge at any time. According to Tumpe, plans for these experiments are already in place. Needless to say, they will require complete approval. Richard Ebright states the following: the prospect that the CDC and military labs will jump the gun on nature would be worrisome under any circumstances. But what can justify the risk of bringing these superviruses into existence? The article ends on that note.
And, Ralph, we know why they're doing this. Just as smallpox originally was used against the Native American populations as a military weapon, just as Ebola and other viruses have been used against targeted populations in Africa, just as biological and chemical weapons were used in Indochina against the Vietnamese, Laotian, Cambodian population, just as biological and chemical weapons have been used in the Middle East against the populations there. So we have now, with the manipulation of the viruses, the avian flu virus, the Spanish influenza virus, the mousepox, smallpox, the replication of smallpox, which has been eradicated throughout the world, and even hepatitis, which we will discuss soon. We have here the development of military weapons. But before we discuss this, let us pause for station identification.
Hey guys,
here from WBAI.
Oh hi,
you
big
know?
Fan of your show.
We know each other.
Well, I listen to BAR when I can. Thank you. I love your station.
Try and keep public opinion alive.
I don't like you, but I love you. Seems like I'm always thinking of you. Oh, you treat me bad. This is Cindy Lauper, and you're listening to WBAI. You really got a hold on me. Public radio. Gotta love it.
This is Taking Aim with
Ralph Schoenman
and Maya Schoen. We continue with our discussion of creating the next pandemic in the military labs. We have been discussing the creation of the manipulation of the avian flu virus, the next expected pandemic, as the military and the president and all the officials and Interpol throughout the world have been warning. And we've been discussing the manipulation of the Spanish flu influenza. But we've also noted that there has been the manipulation of other viruses in the lab that could create pandemics. And let's look at some of these. One is the mousepox. New Scientist, October 29, 2003. United States develops lethal new viruses. A scientist funded by the U.S. government, and that scientist is Mark Bueller of the University of St. Louis, has deliberately created, and the key word here is deliberate, an extremely deadly form of mousepox, a relative of the smallpox virus, and he did so through genetic engineering. The new virus kills all mice, even if they have been given antiviral drugs, as well as a vaccine that would normally protect them. The work has not stopped there. The cowpox virus, which infects a range of animals, including humans, the cowpox virus is like the variola virus, which is smallpox, has been genetically altered in a similar way. The new virus, which is about to be tested on animals, should be lethal only to mice, according to Mark Bueller. But the new scientists who are connected to the new scientists in Great Britain, such as Ian Ramshaw of the Australian National University in Cambria, are concerned because they believe, they have seen this happen time and again, that a pox virus can cross species. Ralph?
Ramshaw was a member of a team that discovered how to make a mouse pox more deadly. And, in fact, the Ramshaw told a New Scientist that this team has created more deadly forms of mouse pox and has used the same method to engineer an even more deadly rabbit pox virus. And the research revealed that the new engendered pox viral agents are more virulent and more dangerous than that which they are presumably attempting to contain. Ramshaw's team made its initial discovery while developing contraceptive vaccines for sterilizing mice, but the mouse pox virus adds a gene, and by adding a gene, it totally transforms the structure and thereby the immunosuppressant potential in humans. The modified mousepox virus was, quote, far more lethal, killing 60% of the vaccinated mice. The additional IL-4 agent switched off a key part of the immune system called the cell-mediated response. So what are they doing here? They're looking for modalities that switch off the key elements of the immune system. They're not engendering a type of virus that could counteract or contain or kill or eliminate the deadly strain. They're doing precisely the opposite. Bueller has engineered a mouse pox strain that kills 100% of the vaccinated mice, even they would when they were treated with the antiviral drug Cetoforver. What they've done is to optimize the virus and to engender something for which there is no capacity within the mouse population, let alone the human population, to resist it. He has constructed a cowpox virus containing all of the mouse IL-4 gene, and they are testing this at the U.S. Army Medical Research Institute of Infectious Disease at Fort Detrick. Cowpox infects people.
Ralph,
yes,
this
Maya.
Is the key bit of information, because it looks on paper as if Mark Bueller is just an inquiring scientist studying viruses and how they function. And he's at the University of St. Louis. His research is funded by the U.S. government, by the National Institute of Allergies and Infectious Disease. Well, this sounds benign. But then when you see who his colleagues are, Bueller's scientific colleagues are the scientists at the U.S. AMRIID at Fort Detrick, Maryland, as you mentioned. And that is where they do the further testing of the research that is done within the universities throughout the United States, from the university labs to the U.S. AMRIID.
And Maya Ramshaw makes the following point. There is no reason to do these cowpox experiments other than to create something for which there's no human resistance. While viruses containing the mouse IL-4 should not be lethal to humans, the recombinant viruses that they are engendering, Ramshaw points out, will have unexpected effects. They will not be mouse-specific. Why is this group engineering viruses that will be contagious in humans? Despite the protests, the government insists that it is necessary to do this work, but the work on the lethal new pox viruses is exactly that which endangers populations on a large scale. Members of the audience in Geneva, listening to the presentation about the work of Bueller, called out challenges, and one member of the audience in Geneva questioned the need for such experiments, and a voice boomed out from the panel, 9/11, and then there were murmurs of agreement. 9/11 indeed. 9/11 is deployed as the rationale for the militarization of virulent viral agents that can create a mass pandemic. And 9/11 is exactly what the model and exactly the nature of this operation itself. The government staged 9/11 precisely to terrorize the population of the world and to create the rationale for repression and for imperial reach. And the creation of the next pandemic is exactly on the model of 9/11 itself. The Washington Post, on April 17th of 2005, Playing with Viruses by Wendy Orent, replicating the flu strain will get us all burnt. And there she spells out, the threat is man-made. Scientists in the United States and Great Britain are recreating the deadliest flu epidemic of the last century, the 1918 pandemic. They are working on producing artificial viruses that will replace common human flu genes with 1918 genes. The release of one of their constructs could make the Meridian era look as menacing as a cauliflower. The flu strain sent out by Meridian, known as H2N2, Japan, first appeared in 1957 and caused a worldwide pandemic. But that is very small compared to what will result when the currently modified virus is released upon humanity. Calling the H2N2 Japan strain a killer, as news reports across the globe have done, makes little sense in comparison with what they are preparing now, Wendy Orrin states. And she makes the point that the pandemic of 1957, which killed over a million people, is a minor incident in comparison with the consequence of this work that is being done.
Ralph, let's go back to the manipulation of these viruses and the genome manipulation. That is particularly combining H5N1 with the common flu virus that many of us experience each winter. And that also mutates, and that's why flu shots are not effective, is because each time that shot is based upon what the flu was the year before, and the flus mutate. An article in Reuters, bird flu viruses carry unique genes, and a study. This is from January 26th of this year by Maggie Fox, the health and science correspondent, notes. Scientists may have found out what makes the H5N1 influenza virus so deadly. Bird flu viruses have a gene that may make them especially destructive to cells. This research was done at St. Jude Children's Research Hospital in Memphis, and the key researcher was Clayton Naive. People infected with H5N1 bird flu virus in Vietnam and Thailand had the avian version of the flu virus, and these are people who had handled sick birds. And also, the victims of the 1918 influenza pandemic, which killed tens of millions of people, probably 50 million people is the estimate, the best estimate, they too had the signs of this gene. The influenza viruses that cause the normal seasonal human misery, the flu virus, and those that caused the less deadly 1957 and 1968 human flu pandemics do not carry these avian genes. In other words, the deadly avian genes. Now, this was published in Science. And the scientists, the researchers at St. Jude's Children's Research Hospital have been sequencing influenza virus genes. They have a sample of 11,000 influenza viruses, including 7,008 of the avian type. Now, Dr. Robert Webster notes, and he's been at St. Jude's for over 30 years studying these influenza viruses, quote, "We have sequenced a diverse sampling of 336 avian influenza viruses from this collection, including isolates from ducks, gulls, shorebirds, and poultry collected in North American, Eurasian, and Australasian countries, primarily during the years 1976 to 2004. The H5N1 virus has been found in birds for decades, but it was first seen to infect people in 1997 in Hong Kong. Since it resurfaced in 2003, it has infected less than 200 people, about 180 people. It's killed half of them, according to the World Health Organization, but it forced the culling of hundreds of millions of birds. But what they have noted is that the two proteins, the NS1 and NS2, these are non-structural proteins, that once they infect a cell, they're the ones that cause the damage. And these are not in the human flu virus. And what we have with the government now at the Center for Disease Control is that they are taking this avian virus, the H5N1, the influenza virus, they're looking at the genes that make it deadly. They're combining it with the human viruses, which do not have this genes, in order to make a deadly virus that will be deadly to human beings.
Yes, Maya. In Wendy Rentz's Washington Post piece, Playing with Viruses, she cites a technique of Garcia, Sastre, and colleagues, which developed sequences that can translate into the actual viral RNA. But since the whole genome hasn't been published, scientists can't recreate the entire 1918 flu. So what they are doing is combining 1918 genes with laboratory strains that have been adapted to grow in mice. mice, which don't normally catch human flu. And what the consequence of this, as we've been discussing, is spelled out by Peter J. Jarling, the chief scientist at the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Disease. Doing this is like looking for a gas leak with a lighted match. What concerns Jarling is that these experiments involving the 1918 genes are being conducted in such a way as to expose the population to something far more virulent. And that is the theme that is reiterated in every objective report. Here, the New Scientist on 26th of February 2004, superflu is being brewed in the lab. After the worldwide alarm triggered by 2003 SARS outbreak, and parenthetically I should mention, we've already done a whole series on Mai Van Ho's exposure of the SARS outbreak as exactly that, a laboratory event. The article continues, it might seem reckless to set about creating a potentially far more devastating virus in the lab. That is what is being attempted by researchers. We already know that the H5N1 bird flu virus ravaging poultry farms can be lethal when it infects people. Now they are tinkering with genes to see if they can turn it into a strain capable of spreading from human to human.
That's
if
right,
they well. Manage this, they will have created a virus that will kill tens of millions of people if it gets out of the lab. Researchers refuse to discuss their plans, but Jacqueline Katz at the U.S. Center for Disease Control in Atlanta told a New Scientist that her team is already tweaking the genes. The H5N1 bird flu virus that killed people in Hong Kong in 1997 and those of the human flu virus H3N2. That is the consistent pattern here. Now, here is an article by William Broad, the New York Times, dating back to November 1st, 2003. Bioterror researchers build a more lethal mousepox. Scientists have created a highly lethal virus. The genetic engineering involving a virus known as mousepox, which infects mice but is not known to hurt people, into a virus into which the scientists spliced a single gene that make it super lethal, and then tested it on mice treated with different combinations of a smallpox vaccine and drugs. So every single documentation of what they're doing, this is bigger than the original Australian work, said Eliza D. Harris, a Clinton administration arms control official at the University of Maryland. They knew the mousepox results, and they have deliberately set out to build upon that work a way in which to create a more deadly virus. The article is detailed in its delineation, William J. Broad's piece in the New York Times. It involves inserting into the mousepox virus a mouse gene that controls interleukin-4, a primary chemical in the immune system's response to invaders. Designer virus so crippled the immune system that extra production of interleukin-4 that the microbe produced wildly killed the mice that had been vaccinated and left all the others permanently disabled. Here, ISIS, genetic engineering of superviruses by Mai Van Ho, 25 years of increasing exploitation of genetic engineering in agriculture and medicine have unleashed the potential for creating viruses and bacteria more virulent than nature's worst. But
well,
in this, yes, Maya.
What I was going to say is that Mai Van Ho makes two very important points among many, but these really hit home with me. She says that since the dawn of genetic engineering in the 1970s, geneticists have found that the cDNA of many RNA viruses, and that is the structure, the spinal column, so to speak, of the viruses, that inserted into bacterial plasmids, that is bacteria, were able to complete their life cycles in the bacteria. And that, she says, bacteria in the environment then provide a convenient reservoir for storing, multiplying, and even recombining the viral genes, which in itself will create new viruses. So just the bacteria in the environment, on people's hands, the bacteria that live in plants and live everywhere around us, that they create a reservoir, they create a home where all these new recombined viruses can multiply and then evolve and create new ones. She also says that genetic engineering involves facilitating a horizontal transfer and rampant recombination of genetic material across species barriers, precisely the conditions that favor the creation of new viruses and bacteria that cause diseases, diseases for which we have no treatment. Now, this,
and,
we have
and
to
she
understand.
Concludes, Maya, when she describes this process, it raises the specter of biological warfare, the far greater danger of the intentional creation of deadly pathogens. And it is transparent here that this scientist has documented and exposed, with respect to SARS, with respect to mousepox, with respect to avian flu, precisely that agenda.
And, Ralph, what we have to understand that in the field of genetic engineering, it's very similar to what has happened in computers. There is not a linear progression of the development of the science. Once you start studying, as with computers, once you start developing the technology, there is an extremely rapid growth in the development. So if we look at an article from Science, July 11th, 2002, this was reported by the BBC News by Dr. David Whitehouse. First synthetic virus created. Scientists have assembled the first synthetic virus. The U.S. researchers built the infectious agent from scratch using the genome sequence for polio. And this was Dr. Eckhard Wimmer, who is leader of the biomedical research team and co-author of the study that was published in the journal Science. And he said, "The reason we did it was to prove that it can be done, and it is now a reality. To construct the virus, all they did was download the recipe, the gene structure that had been analyzed by scientists. They downloaded it from the Internet. They used gene sequences that they purchased from a mail order supplier. Having constructed the virus, which appeared to be identical to its natural counterpart, the researchers from the University of New York at Stony Brook then injected it into mice to demonstrate that it was active. The animals were paralyzed and then died." And as I mentioned before, Dr. Eckhard Wimmer, who is the leader of the team, said, "The reason we did it was to prove that it can be done, and it is now a reality." Now, the polio virus is one of the simplest. And what we've gone from here in July 11th of 2002 is the first synthetic virus created to where we have the total manipulation of very complex viruses. As I said, as with computer technology, we have with genetic engineering very rapid development.
Maya, the New Scientist article on 11th of July 2002 by Robin Owant, "Scientists Build Polio Virus from Scratch." Scientists have built the virus that causes polio from scratch in the lab, and the feat proves that even if all the polio virus in the world were destroyed, they are resurrecting the crippling disease, says Aniko Paul at the State University of New York at Stony Brook. Paul believes the synthesis method will be applied to other viral diseases. This will be used for Ebola and smallpox, just about anything, she says. And here in the New Scientist, again, an article called "Polio Power." While health workers race to eradicate poliomyelitis, a re-engineered polio virus has been used as a weapon by researchers in North Carolina. And again, here we have in the New Scientist on July 17, 2002, the article by Sylvia Pagan, "Ebola virus will be synthesized. The technique to create the first synthetic polio virus revealed last week is now to be used to recreate Ebola as well as the 1918 flu strain that killed up to 40 million people, experts have told the New Scientist. What is even more worrying is that there are easy ways of recreating these microbes. To recreate the polio, the team at Stony Brook University brought bits of its sequence from companies that make any piece of DNA to order. At the moment, only short stretches of DNA can be custom-made, so the team had to assemble the genome, which is about 7,500 base pairs long, by stitching together sequences of about 7 base pairs. Dramatic as it sounds, this was no scientific tour of the force. All the steps are routinely followed by thousands of labs worldwide. And then the real worry, it states, is that bioterrorists will use the method to recreate viruses such as Ebola and smallpox.
Oh,
bioterrorists?
Right.
It's the military which is doing this. Ebola from scratch. This obstacle has already been overcome. In January, scientists reported they had made Ebola using reverse genetics, which means that instead of identifying the gene as in its composition, they study the position of the genome, the position of the gene and the overall structure, and then by so doing this in reverse order, they recreate the position of the gene and engender it anew. The team got this genome from the virus itself, and since the Ebola genome is only slightly larger than the polio's, there's no reason why they cannot assemble this from scratch as well, and that is what they have done. Here we have on March 6, 2005 in the Science Daily, scientists replicate hepatitis C virus in the laboratory. For the first time, scientists have replicated hepatitis B virus, HCV, in the laboratory. To replicate the HCV into cell culture will allow the researchers to create variants of this virus which have not been resistant before. Until recently, research on this infectious disease has suffered from the lack of a robust in vitro model system. And now what they are doing is recreating it in a virulent form, even more so than that which had preceded it. Here you have Rachel Novak. Yes,
Ralph, we'll run out of time, and we'll continue with the subject next week when we resume with Taking Aim, and we're going to talk about the not just the evolution and the recreation and the furthering of the avian flu virus, but we were going to talk about its origin.
Please remember, brothers and sisters, that I will be speaking in New York on the 22nd, Treason at the Top, the Underlying Politics of 9/11. At West Park Presbyterian Church, 86th of Amsterdam. And I will be speaking on Sunday on April 23rd on From Staging 9/11 to Creating the Next Pandemic, a System in Terminal Decay, at St. Martin's Church, 2nd Avenue and 10th Street.
This is Ralph Schoenman of Taking Aim. I will be speaking in New York on April 22nd and April 23rd. Come hear Treason at the Top, the Underlying Politics of 9/11, Saturday, April 22nd, 7 p.m. at West Park Presbyterian Church at 86th and Amsterdam Avenue. Doors open at 6 p.m. On Sunday, April 23rd, I will present From Staging 9/11 to Creating the Next Pandemic, A System in Terminal Decay, at St. Mark's Church, 2nd Avenue and 10th Street, 6:30 p.m. See full details at www.ny911truth.org or call 212-714-7147. See you on April 22nd and April 23rd.